can step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 691. My name is Lisa Sheps. I am your host for today. My co-host is the fabulous Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to the two of us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live as we do on Wednesdays in October at KOOP.org.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
So mama worked, she never
seen. It is Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. We have a jam-packed show today. We have the Glass Half Full Theater Company and their production of Yamul Kukui. Then the UT Department of Theater and Dance are going to be here in Sisters We Trust or my blanked up American doll play. Later, we'll be talking to Cirque Vita. And then finally, towards the end of the show, we'll be talking to folks that are producing The Caldera, a new play by the local playwright Sarah Saltwick. And of course, Nicole and I are going to talk about lots of things in the world of theater. New York, Chicago, and beyond. Don't go away.
Perhaps the scales can wait for just one night.
Oops, it just stopped. You know what? Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
As I was, you know, putting the show together, and I noticed that piece of music just stopped, and I said, oh, we'll have faded it out long before that
It'd
actually happens. We were just
Who
about
was
to
that
fade.
Singing? What a lovely little voice.
I don't remember.
That's okay.
But it is from the show Love Story, and that is Jenny's piano song. Let me see if maybe it's on. It's not.
That's
so,
okay. I know how to let my fingers do the walking.
That's good. Well, you can do your fingers doing the walking. That was the piano song in honor of the Broadway show that opened this week, The Piano Lesson by August Wilson, which we're going to talk about in a second. I wanted to talk about a couple or at least one other thing first.
Tell me.
Is that okay?
What thing do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to first say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not necessarily the opinions of Co-op, its board of directors, or its staff, but merely my personal opinions about things.
Okay.
Just need to say that. So,
are there some opinions?
Well, I do have some opinions, and I want to talk about this a little bit. We talk about Broadway here and shows, but you know, there are bigger things in this world that we need to deal with. And I wanted to implore upon our listeners to vote this year.
Yes, it's coming up.
It's
There's
coming
the
up.
Early voting and the regular voting.
It's
day.
Really, really, really important. And I really
the locals are way more important. Some really
exactly,
affecting
and that's
our daily life.
And that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of times, you know, especially with the national elections, we get lost in the big story items. But the things that affect us daily and affect the arts, if you think that your vote does not affect what happens in the arts community, you are out of your mind. because when money is tight, which it is currently, many times the powers be say, well, let's cut the fat. And that fat, in their opinion, is arts.
Yes.
And arts education and everything
that
has to do with
happen.
The arts. If it's, you know, if it's not concretely, very distinctly either helping others or helping the economy, they don't see the value to it. And I have to tell you once and for all, if you don't know, arts
matters.
Are good for the... arts matters. Thank
mm-hmm.
you. And not only does arts... open the mind. It brings voice to issues on any side of an issue. It, for those that are creating art, especially in arts education, not only do those kids get the education around arts and helping in their cognitive thinking, their history, math, all sorts of things go when you work in an artistic pursuit and teach arts education to kids, but their grade scores go up.
Their grade scores, math and science, the excel in math and science helps you socially to think outside of the box, to interact, and heart. It actually heals your soul. It's
right.
the vibration and energy of connecting collectively with a group of strangers is kind of powerful.
And if you look at things that are happening locally, if you say, oh, well, arts are not important, and I will say this, that take the arts financing and arts support out of the picture in general, we've talked about it on this show before. You know, the world, the community at large, I believe, thinks it's okay, and I'm using air quotes, for artists to be just on the edge of financial stability.
Yeah.
Because it's about suffering for your art. And that goes not only for the
that
individual.
Or it's, oh, you're just over there having a good time.
Or you're just over there playing practice.
You're just playing.
You're painting pretty pictures. You're sculpting. You're playing with clay. All those things don't matter.
Look at Basquiat. Someone said that to him, but he's a legend at this point in time later in life. And then just all aspects of art everywhere.
And when you look at all great societies, those societies in many times started
to honor.
Yes, true. But those great societies started with the creative class. And if you look at neighborhoods, if you take neighborhoods like East Austin, for example, you know, it was a area that was ignored for a lot of nefarious reasons, but it was ignored and it was not taken care of. The artists move in because it's cheaper to live here. And then suddenly with those creative people that move into places, others follow. The city of Austin touts itself as the music capital of the world, the entertainment capital. All these creative endeavors are what the city uses to market people to come here. So we need to tell the city and the state and the federals how important we think art is by using our vote.
I love that.
So voting, early voting in Austin starts on October 24th.
That's next Monday.
That's next Monday. And then Election Day officially is November 8th. And I just want to really, really, really encourage people to get out there and vote. I don't care about your political affiliation at all.
No, it's,
I just
it's
want you
just
to vote.
Going out there and doing it. Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell me that it is not your duty, that it's not patriotic, that it's not something you have time for, even though in many districts and in many localities, it may not be as easy as it is to vote, but I would argue that it's important enough that if you need to stand in line for a few hours, you stand in line for a few hours.
There's some, I know that there's maps online that show you where there are early locations on which days and then where there are additional locations on the actual day because they're not all the same.
They are not all the same. And
don't be fooled by that. They're not all the same.
True. And if you have the ability to move around the city easily, then you can find a voting spot that does not have a line.
Yes,
by
they
looking
do
online.
Show you the little how long is the wait also. Right. I did forget about that feature, too. That is a nice feature.
So I want Austinites to go out and vote. And furthermore, I'd like all of those listeners that listen outside of the Austin metropolitan area to also vote. You know,
there's a lot of elections going on everywhere within your state, your city, your county.
Right.
So now
I'm talking about the issue of arts, and that's important to me because it's my livelihood. It's important to me as just a human being.
It's your jam.
There are a lot of other issues out there, folks.
There are.
So please I would just encourage you to vote. It's easy. It takes no time at all.
It is. Usually. I believe there are sample ballots normally wherever you can find the maps too.
Yep.
So you can go in going, what am I voting on? And find out.
And furthermore, as Nicole said early on, is that local matters. And in Austin, we're voting on a mayor. We're voting on a whole bunch of city council seats.
Lots of stuff.
School board seats, judges, all of those things. Take some time, look and see what's out there, because it's those judges, those school board seats that are so vitally important to hear your voice. And it would be great if those committees, those councils, those school boards were actually mirroring what the actual citizens of
the
city
citizens
feel.
And community are feeling. Yes.
And if you don't vote, you are not part of that voice.
Well, you know, and then it's like the armchair quarterback.
Yeah. I love sports metaphors.
Backseat driver.
I love driving metaphors. All right, so I'm off of my soapbox, but really would love for folks to...
rock the vote.
To rock the vote. To youth the vote. To whatever the vote. To act the vote.
Do the vote.
To tread the boards the vote.
Get out and vote.
Get out the vote.
Make the vote.
So we have a jam-packed...
I know, I keep laughing at that every time you say that, because we're like...
We have so many people on the schedule, and yet no one has showed up. So we might just be, I see somebody walking in.
Somebody's coming in.
So let's get to talk about the big issues
let's
that we're
talk
talking
about.
About
some issues.
So we talked about the piano lesson, August Wilson's part of his historical Pittsburgh cycle.
Yes.
So that opened, and the Did He Like It aggregator, or I'm sorry, Did They Like It aggregator, gave it 10 thumbs up, 4 middle of the road, and 0 thumbs down. So this isn't actually an interesting show of August Wilson's. Probably
it's a strong team behind
it too. Very strong team. And he's not, this is not one of his more done pieces.
No, it's not.
It's got ghosts in it.
Ghosts. Ghosts, fire. Water.
Indeed, all
those
of it.
Those are all great
Dirt.
Elements.
Yep. So it is about a family, and at the center of is this heirloom piano that some of the family
tomato, but
wants.
I knew you meant heirloom piano. It
could be an heirloom.
Funny.
Could be an heirloom tomato.
Yes.
But it turns into a battle about whether to sell the piano or to keep it in the family.
We had that battle in our family once.
No,
for real.
There you go. Well, not that that's what we're talking about here,
no,
but
I
have an heirloom piano in my house that nobody in my family wants.
Really?
Yeah. And unlike,
it's not easy to find a home for a piano.
Right.
But we can have that conversation. I could help you find a home for the piano.
Well,
if you
want it to stay in the family. So if you've got some connections,
well, I do know some of your family. So let me figure that one out. I'll work on it.
Not that family, but thank you. So let's talk about this show. It did the New York Times. Maya Phillips, writing for the Times, was one of the middle of the road people. She didn't really like it all that much. I should say that in the cast, it's got Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And Danielle Brooks.
Yeah.
As part of the big star talent. But it's also directed by Samuel Jackson's wife.
Isn't that cool? Awesome sauce?
Yeah. Oh my God, I just lost her name. And anyway, I find it. And it opened last Thursday at the Barrymore Theater. It takes place in Pittsburgh in 1936 in the house of Doker Charles, who's played by Samuel L. Jackson, and his niece is Danielle Brooks. The set is by Beowulf Borat, and she says it's a too on the nose design. She says it's a little skeletal. So the house is very the set seems to be very minimalistic.
Because it's all about the piano.
And the piano is big and bold, and I think it's cool.
I think it's about the piano.
Yep. But it's also what's LaTanya Richardson Jackson is the.
I was like, she had a three person name. I just couldn't remember. Well, and that's there it Samuel's is. Wife, right? Correct.
Correct. So the in Maya's review, she loved John David Washington, who played one of the sons. He said he's his performance is a revelatory stage debut. And he is a blaze of energy lighting every scene he's in.
Oh, I love when there's always someone that they find it. That's how I found the Kush Jumbo in the river with Hugh Jackman. I love that.
There you go.
Something that just takes you so somewhere, like a performance. That's just spectacular.
She didn't. She wasn't Can't crazy about the rest about of the cast, well, including
Samuel
Jackson and Danielle Brooks. Hmm. But the rest of the critics really liked. Some of the other critics said, Broadway News' Brittany Samuel said, director LaTanya Richardson Jackson, the first woman to direct an August Wilson show
Isn't
on Broadway.
Bananas?
Mm-hmm. Artfully pilots a contemporary and comedic rendition of the work. Juan Michael Porter II of Did They Like It said in her Broadway directorial debut, rather than navigate between the subtleties, LaTanya Richard Jackson latches on to the piano lesson's more obvious things that a house divided cannot stand.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hello, Romeo and Juliet.
it was very Romeo and Juliet. That's funny.
And in New York Daily News, Chris Jones said Jackson is terrific, especially in Act One, as he, and we're talking about Samuel L. in this case, as he crackles with life and humor, sparring with Washington with a delicious kind of ease, even as the authentic Brooks, playing one of Wilson's strongest female characters, tried to build a home for her daughter in The Next Generation.
Hmm.
There you go. Take that, Maya Phillips.
There you go.
And finally, Vulture's Jackson McHenry said August Wilson's drama deals directly in ghost stories. And this revival seems especially haunted internally and meta-theatrically, toiling under the weight of the past.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. And now folks are starting to come in. So we can...
We have people.
So now we have to think about speeding things up a little bit. I want to talk about one other thing. Folks, y'all can come on and find microphones. We have to do everything.
You can move them all around here.
How
by
the
these...
sausage is made. We yep. don't have to get too into detail right now. Let's continue to talk.
I know. They were far away, though.
Okay, we're going to continue to talk. So the other thing I wanted to talk about is the whole Hadestown Michigas with...
Yeah.
But this is actually something I was going to talk about before. So I just lost her name. What's her name?
Lila White?
Lilias White.
Lilias White, sorry.
Yeah. Saw a person who she thought was videotaping from their seat, and she stopped the performance and called the person out. As it turns out, the person was not videotaping. It was she was a deaf person, deaf or hard of hearing person, who had a device so that she could enjoy the show. This brought on a whole bunch of stuff, but before that even happened, and this is something I've talked about on this show, when we've talked about when Patti LuPone has done this, I think shame on all these actors that step out of character mm-hmm. and talk directly to the audience. Mm-hmm. I think it is unprofessional, no mm-hmm. matter who it is, no matter what level of person that they are. There are people that are tasked with doing these things. That's what house management is for.
I was this whole thing, I'm like, where is the front of house and the house manager? Where is the front of house? Like, why is there conversation?
Well, right. It's very easy for an actor to talk to a stage manager who has direct communication with
exactly.
the house. And I should tell folks who's here with us, who came in, so y'all could join in the conversation. We have Connor Hopkins. Hi, Connor. You know what? I'm going to turn on your microphones.
Dun, dun,
what do you
dun.
Think of that? That's going to make a difference.
It's going to make it happen.
Indigo Real? Is Indigo here? Remind me your names. Sorry.
Sochi Sosa.
Sochi. Oh, okay. Okay. Good. You are early. Good. That's good. And remind me your name?
Griselda.
So. Griselda, you don't look like yourself. Sorry.
It's the cat.
Sorry. I normally am able to like source everybody's name and faces before we start the show. I was expecting Indigo. Is she not coming?
She got held up
and that's fine.
Wasn't able to make it, which is the only reason I'm here at all.
That's fine.
Normally they Very keep true. Me in the bowels of the theater.
Well, good. Well, let's continue the conversation, then we're going to talk to you about your specific stuff as we go. So I just want to give you the opportunity to talk about these things. How do y'all feel about it?
I agree. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think it is... I like to stay in character. I think if anything, my character can justify a glance, maybe I'll do that. But aside from that, I just don't think it's my role to do that. That's not what I'm there for. So I agree with you.
Right. It's an actor's job to perform as a character. And if you step out, and in Lilias White's defense, I think it was in a really heavy part, which... she felt like she was taken out of the role, but shame on them for that, because as an actor, you're constantly dealing with things that are outside the walls of the piece, and it's your job to stay in character.
Yeah, it seems like if what you're worried about is the actors and therefore the audience being taken out of the moment, what's going to do that more than stopping the show,
right,
and yelling at the audience? I mean, if that's what you're worried about, that's not the solution.
No.
So one of the things that has been discussed around this is a lot of people have talked about in equating what Lilias did to Patti LuPone, who is famous for breaking character and yelling at the audience. And
that's
usually
like shtick at this point, right? Hmm? I mean, that's like shtick at this point.
It is. It's a trope,
hoping that will happen. Right?
Well, but she has been lifted up for doing it. People have said good for you for
doing it.
And what some people are saying is the difference between Lilias White and Patti LuPone is the color of their skin. And I say, my opinion is neither of them should be doing it. And
my opinion is neither of them should
and
be doing
I've
it.
And I've never said good things about Patti LuPone when she's come out and
neither
done that stuff.
Neither have I.
But that's I find it interesting and probably accurate dynamic to the situation. So, not apropos of this, but coincidental to this, Patti LuPone has given up her Equity membership.
Yes. Apparently she did it, though, right after when company
Correct.
Closed.
Because right.
she figured, I'm not going to be on stage for a while. So
but
she...
when that... So it came out publicly right after this came out. So everybody assumed that she quit Equity on the basis of
Well,
this.
And part of it was she tweeted and made it almost sound that way when she was like, yeah, this is why I gave up my Equity card. I don't want to be in like this circus or cesspool or something. She made some sort of... like, I don't want to be in the middle of this
Correct.
Junk anymore, and this is why I get... my people were like, what?
She didn't necessarily say, I don't want to be in the middle of the show. She made a comment, this is... it,
this
like,
is
this
part
is crazy.
Of, this
it's
is
not part of
why.
She didn't say part of why. She just said, this stuff is crazy. I've given up my Equity card. She didn't...
No, she did equate it. Because I was like, oh, that was a little like...
Well,
not
anyway.
Not surprised for her. But either way, they confirmed that she gave up her card. It was back in company, and she nor her rep will talk anything
right.
else about it.
You can go to offstageonair.com. There's a link to the New York Times article about both of these things that you can see. So let's take a little break, and then we're going to
come back and talk to
Glass Half Full.
Woohoo!
Okay, and what are we going to listen to? I'm going to tell you what we're going to listen to. This is...
why'd you choose this?
I'm going to tell you. I've got to remember. Lilias White is in this.
Ah!
And her beautiful
okay.
voice.
There
so this
you
is
go.
From Fela, the Broadway show, and this is called Rain.
Why did I not realize she was in that cast?
Well, me neither. We'll be right back. That's not the right thing. It went back to the beginning. We don't know why. Here we go. Let's try this again. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. We had some great conversations just moments ago, and we're going to continue on and talk to our first guest. We've already spoken to them. I will reintroduce them, Connor Hopkins.
Hello.
Who is, What is your role in Glass Half Full? I know you're the artistic director of Trouble Puppet.
Yes. And then I also have the good fortune to be married to the artistic director
you are of indeed.
Glass Half Full.
Caroline Reck.
Yes. But we had worked together, and we more or less take turns leading the way on, you know, if it's a Trouble Puppet production, I can lead and she'll support me, and then vice versa. And so I am doing whatever needs to be done. I'm acting in this one, which is, you know, not my thing. and then building the set and working on the shadow puppets and performing various puppets in the show and... whatever needs doing.
Wonderful. And that's then one means. Of the performers, Graciela Silva.
Yes.
How are you?
Hello, I'm doing well.
It is so good to see you.
Likewise.
We haven't had you on the show in a while.
We're
In a while. So tell me if I'm pronouncing this correctly. Yes. Yamel Kukui?
Yep.
Okay. So tell
dun,
us.
Dun, dun.
One of you, I don't care which one, tell us about the show itself.
Okay, well, so Yamel Kukui has been part of our brains and hearts for 4 years now. We finally, after several delays, found the time, the right space, you know. And so we were like, okay, this is it. And the show, it's about a girl that is on the border between worlds, and she's threatened by immigration officers and supernatural specters of her childhood, Mexican folklore. And she's on the precipice of adulthood, and she kind of journeys between life and death to discover her own wisdom and how to kind of fight the idea of borders.
And are you playing this role?
Yes,
I am. What's the character's name?
Yamel.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. She's Yamel. Mm-hmm.
The titular role, as we like to say.
Yes.
So
you've gotten to use that like 3 weeks in a row now, I think.
I know.
It's exciting.
I've had the great fortune of seeing this come together because y'all are performing it at Ground Floor Theater.
She's been talking about it coming to life before her eyes.
And I know that I saw a little thing that popped up on social media yesterday, a video with the owl. Oh, my God, how beautiful is that?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit, Connor, about the puppetry in the show.
Well, there's several different kinds. It's one of the, I think, hallmarks of Glass Half Full is that Caroline is conversant in pretty much every form of object theater, movement theater, puppetry, and, you know, just normal old acting. So we end up with, in this show, we have full on stage puppets. We've got an owl that flies around and has all over the stage, has about a 4 foot, 5 foot wingspan of the puppet. And then it has a big transformation that I will not give away. And then there's loads of shadow puppets that we spent months. We had a residency in Memphis to go and just like do nothing but make shadow puppets for a month. And what else? There's costumes that are effectively puppets in and of themselves. And then the set, again, without giving things away,
it's a puppet.
all the set pieces are sort of puppets in their own way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing.
I like that. I like that the set is really a puppet in its own. I like that.
Yes.
That's intriguing.
That's one of the things I love about Glass Half Full is the amount that really, if you talk about the magic of theater, it's really personified in the work that y'all do.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is no opportunity overlooked to get some magic in there.
True. And was this a piece that was supposed to be pre-pandemic and we're now finally getting to it?
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. So it's been a long road.
Yes. Yes.
And so not only is it a long road for you guys in putting this together, but it's also conversely a long road for the character as she makes her way through the world.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
And it's changed quite a bit from, I mean, 4 years ago, idea of the show was dramatically different.
Yes. It was procedural, a lot more like litigation kind of. But now we remembered in these years, like, wait, what is what you're saying, you know, glass half full, good at? And it's the magical realism of reality, you know? It's
like, which is what?
Which is, again,
I love reality
intriguing.
That is magical and realistic at the same time. Magical realism is such a wonderful theatrical tool that we use these days, and wasn't a word that we bantied about back in the 70s and 80s, so I love that it's that it's there. So unfortunately, we don't have a whole bunch of time because we have a zillion people waiting to talk to us.
Dun, dun, dun.
But tell us...
Very, very popular.
You were very popular. We're just like Wicked. Tell us about when the show opens.
The show opens Friday, October 21st.
And plays through?
And it plays through November 5th.
Wonderful. Is there anything, so who, is there anybody else you want to highlight at the, on
the
creative
team? Yeah, real quick. Paul Pignon has, he composed, it's an original score.
Original
and it's
score,
indigenous
amazing.
Percussion
oh,
and
wow.
folkloric guitar, and it's just beautiful. It's,
with, you know, overtones of horror movies.
Yeah.
Themes
synthesizers.
In there,
and it's just, it's beautiful. It, he just composed it so perfectly for this show.
Wonderful. And is it pre-recorded or will it be performed live?
Pre-recorded.
Pre-recorded. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. And the other, I mean, I obviously we're going to leave people out and that's unfortunate, but Annie Ulrich made the costumes, which includes the Lechusa owl puppet.
The owl.
Oh, wow.
Several other pieces that are just really stunning. You know, the first time somebody puts them on and walks out on stage, everybody in the crew just kind of goes,
that little video I saw is amazing. I have not seen it in person yet. So where can folks go to get more information about the show?
They can go to our website, glasshalffulltheater.com, and we also have the events on Humanitics as well.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, great. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you
for coming. Yes, thank you.
That was Connor Hopkins and Griselda Silva of Glass Half Full Theater. Their show, Yamul Kukui, plays October 21st through November 5th. For more information, glasshalffull.com. And this is a song called Glass Half Full. We'll be right back.
Some folks say half empty when the sweet wine flows.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. We just had a wonderful conversation with Connor Hopkins and Griselda Silva of Glass Half Full. And now we're going to turn to the University of Texas Department of Theater and Dance here. And Jenny Lavery and Justine Gelfman. Justine, welcome to the show. You've never been here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jenny, welcome.
Hi, thank
and
you.
And right before we turned on the mics, Jenny accused me of saying Jenny Lavery. But I will say this. You had the fact that I mispronounced your name 17 years ago correctly. But it was I called you Laverly.
Yes,
Laverly.
But it was never Lavery.
Never Lavery.
Other people do Lavery.
Other people do that. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, but Jenny and I, we saw each other a lot during the beginning of the pandemic, and I haven't seen her in a long time, so it's really good to see her and have her on the show. So y'all are doing a show called In Sisters We Trust, or My Blanked Up American Doll Play.
We are.
Which was written by you, Justine. In case you didn't know.
No. Well, it's good to find that out.
Okay. Thought I'd let you know. It's part of our duty here.
Surprise!
Can you tell us what this show is about?
Yeah. So it's about the American Girl dolls who are all grown up and gathered together for like a bachelor-style reunion. And they're all in their mid-20s. And chaos ensues as the girls sort of question what these social scripts mean as adult women. And then something glitches, and the women are thrown into a self-identifying female co-working space, and the progressive women at the helm are perpetuating these age-old oppressive practices, but now it's in a shade of millennial pink, and it's looking at how corporate feminism is repeating and rebranding mistakes of the past instead of actually finding ways towards empowerment and connection.
It looks...
Okay, I love everything about this. I just had a big grin on my face.
And it looks amazing. I saw a little video on social media today that showed the set and some of the stuff, and it looks amazing. And Jenny, you are directing this piece.
I am.
So I should say also, and one of the reasons why you and I haven't seen much of each other is you're a student again.
I am.
So you're a master's student, doctoral master's.
Yep.
In directing.
Second year MFA director.
And
that's
you
awesome
are directing
sauce.
This piece.
I am. Yes,
so
I am.
Tell us about your approach and how much fun. I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm as someone who runs a theater myself, I'm jealous of all the toys it appears that you get to play with.
So many toys. So many toys. It's the thing that really drew me to the piece is the wild theatricality in it. There are things that explode, that catch on fire. There's, I won't ruin all of the tricks, but lots of furniture pieces have tricks inside of them. And so, yeah, there's a lot of bells and whistles.
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans. Yeah,
exactly.
Shenanigans are good.
Chaos ensues everywhere.
Chaos and shenanigans. I'm down.
So is this the first time this piece has been produced?
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of fun.
Wonderful. And we talk about this all the time on this show, especially with new pieces and the travels and the route that a piece travels from initial conception in the playwright's mind to first performance with a cast and how those things change at different points. How much has this evolved once you've started working on the production and working with Jenny?
A lot, yeah. I would say. Yeah. And Jenny and I started working like 8 or 9 months ago on it last spring. And like we've cut 30 pages of it, and a lot of changes have happened in the room, and getting it up on its feet and sort of getting to play with all of these toys have led to a lot of really exciting discoveries.
And I think we'll continue to make those discoveries with audiences. You know, it's the first time. It's a satire, and there's a lot of comedy that happens. And so we will be learning right alongside the audience this weekend and next.
So will you make changes during the run, similar to like how, you know, shows do in their previews? Or will you keep with it until next time you produce it?
I think that's on the table. We're working with like tremendous undergrad actors, and like everyone's a student on the production team for the most part. So I think some of it is going to stay the same just so we can see how it's landing with folks.
Yeah, and to honor their work that they've done on it. They've worked tirelessly for 7 or 8 weeks now. And so
I think that's amazing. When I was in school, we never got a chance to work on an original piece. And I think that's so...
You know what? I lie about that. Never mind. I take that back.
No, well, we didn't. You know, we were just doing... But that's... To work on an original piece as an actor,
so cool.
As a designer, obviously as a director and a playwright, it's just... It's so hard, but so fulfilling. To watch the evolution of a piece of work.
It's so fresh to have all this, like, no look is tainted at the moment with like seeing this or that or this. It's just all these fresh minds in a room.
And I try to empower the actors by saying that, you know, by the time they open the show tomorrow, they will know the characters better than anybody else, better than Justine. You know, better than anybody in the world, because they are the only ones to fully have gone through this process so far.
It's so cool.
Totally.
Amazing, amazing. Now, we talk on the show. We have a lot of theater companies on the show. I know this is wrong, but in my mind, the things that happen at UT, at St. Ed's, are really like for the inner circle, for the people at UT. But this is open to the public. Like anybody in Austin or anybody in the world could come in and see this show, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Which theater is it at?
We are in the Payne Theater in Winchester.
The B. Iden Payne Theater.
Yes.
Which looks, which I don't know that I've ever been in.
I don't know if I've been in that one or not.
It's a big proscenium. It's a large stage, large house.
Yeah.
I like that.
And we'd love to have
there's so many magical little theaters there.
It's around 500.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good size.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's bigger than the Beckett? The Brockett?
The Brockett.
The Brockett, the Beckett, the Crockett. Whatever, I don't know what they're all
about. Potato, potato.
Well, it's amazing. It sounds really good. I'd love to talk a long time. We have a jam packed show here. We got a little late start, so we're gonna have to say goodbye to you. When does this show open?
It's October 20th through
29th. We open 29th. Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, and where can folks go to get information?
You can visit the website, jointhedrama.com.
Oh, yeah. That's a great website.
You know what? So I have to tell you.
Join the drama.
Join the drama. I knew there was a
easy link,
but I could not find it anywhere. So I'm glad you told me. On my notes, I just said Google it.
You could also do that.
Which is how I found it. It's very easy to do. If you Google it, Even if you forget the name, which is something we can't say fully here on the radio. But if you go to UT School Department of Theater and Dance, it'll pop right up there. Well, thank you so much for being
on
the show.
Thank you for coming on today.
I hope I get a chance to see it. It looks amazing. And for folks, if you go into social media and look at the UT Department of Theater and Dance social media page, you'll see a couple little videos that really show what it looks like, and it will, I think, whet your appetite to want to check
insight.
It out. Great. Well, thank you all for coming on.
Thank you.
That was Jenny Lavery.
Oh.
That was Jenny Lavery and Justine Gelfman of UT's Department of Theater and Dance and their show In Sisters We Trust, or My Blanked Up American Doll Play. Opens October 20th, plays through the 29th. For more information, jointhedrama.com.
I love it.
And here we go. We're going to hear Audra singing Baby Doll.
I wanna be somebody's baby doll.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. What a crazy day we're having so far.
It's a lot of fun.
We're not going to get to local stuff today, unfortunately. So
we could tell people where they could find information on the local stuff.
Yep. Well, let's ATXtheater.org.
No.
Yeah, or nowplayingaustin.com.
Those things have everything. Dance, theater, music, the whole shebang.
Everything there. And I do want to remind folks about ATXtheater.org. It's got everything theater. If you take hearken yourself back to the Austin Circle of Theaters days.
Yep.
It's kind of reminiscent of that.
It is.
So I'm really happy to have Sochi Sosa on. Welcome, Sochi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sochi is the founder and creative director. I guess I'm just going to throw that title on to you for Cirque Vita. And they are having a performance called Cirque Vita Cabaret on the 19th of November. And this is a new company, is it not?
Yes, this is brand new. This is actually going to be our fundraiser. And it's actually November 18th and 19th. And it'll be at Sky Candy Austin, which is down over by Springdale.
So in looking at your website, I really loved it. You're showing a lot of circus arts, which obviously are very, very popular. And as I read, as I was reading some of the stuff, I was just thinking about how the term circus arts has changed over the years. Because I almost went to clown college back in the 70s. and circus
in San Francisco?
In Florida, okay. The Ringling Brothers Clown College. But clowning was different back then. Circus was different back then. It was an art form, but it's a different art form now.
Very much so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We are definitely labeling ourselves as like contemporary circus, which for me is kind of bringing the human back into circus. So circus used to be like traditional and there was the acrobat on stage. And now it's a lot about who that person is and the narrative behind that person. And using circus as a vehicle to explore stories rather as like a spectacle.
Right. And I don't know whether it was happening before this. I'm guessing it was. But Cirque du Soleil, when they came on board in the late 80s, I think that was what brought it into like
people general, to see something different than absolutely. Just the cookie cutter version of what they thought was circus.
Yeah, I was going to say zeitgeist, but who wants to say that word?
Which word?
Zeitgeist. So it's I love that you're doing it. How did you come to Circus Arts yourself? Was it your original artistic calling?
Yeah, I started when I was a kid. I went to like a little quirky hippie day camp in Northern California. And then I ended up going to circus school in Vermont and then training up in Canada with actually a lot of Cirque du Soleil mm-hmm. coaches. And then I performed for seven or 8 years professionally. Got injured and kind of started to segue towards this.
Sure.
And this is the start of that. So, yeah, we're super excited. I was in Austin before, and I went back to San Francisco and came back here. And I thought it would be just an awesome place to start a project like this because there's not necessarily anything going on like this in circus.
Right. It's cool. So you're also taking the Latine culture, marrying it with what we would know now as like Cirque.
yeah.
stuff. So, and that's not really out there mm-hmm. by anybody. Nobody's doing that. And so how does the Latin influences, how would I see that? What would I as an audience
Yeah, I think perceive for that me, as? So our first full-length show is called Ventanas, and that explores kind of like glimpsing into people's lives through an apartment building.
Hmm.
And I grew up in an apartment building, and that was a big part of my life, my relationship with my neighbors and just kind of like thin walls, everything wafting through. And I think for me, that was part of my upbringing, having an immigrant father, living in an apartment building, and just having these stories that might not necessarily fit into everyone's lives.
Right.
So that, and then we really want to explore like collaboration with different musical types, like flamenco and... even we're going to have some salsa dancers at our cabaret, but bringing in like other parts of that culture to kind of mesh it with circus and see how that starts to transform.
Wonderful. That's cool. So tell us about the cabaret itself. What's an evening like that going to be?
So us? The cabaret, we have performers coming from all over the U.S. We have an MC who's a comedian, and it's just going to be a fun night.
Is it Amy Schumer?
I wish. She was booked already that night. Yeah. So.
Okay. Steve Martin?
Not Steve Martin.
He's coming next spring with Martin Short.
Very good. Okay, sorry.
not the high-end names like that. But, yeah, it's going to be just a fun couple of nights, and we're fundraising for our full-length show, Ventanas. And we're going to be premiering a piece of our show at the cabaret.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about Ventanas.
So Ventanas is going to be merging circus, dance, and acrobatics.
Ooh.
So it's a pretty dynamic acrobatic show. We have Blip Switch Dance Company, who's a local dance company in town. They did the choreography.
Oh, our other guest in the background is like very, yeah. very, you got fist pumps back there. That was exciting.
And they were awesome. They brought in like this cool modern dance that we're meshing with circus. And it's going to be about like little vignettes. So like little... peeking into people's lives, like them in the kitchen, going through their morning routine and mixing that in with circus, or like the quirky janitors from the apartment building. So we're going to be meshing characters, and then they're going to kind of all intermix in this ensemble dance and acrobatic.
That's wonderful. Cool. So your cabaret... because we're running out of time, is running two nights, the 18th and 19th of November.
Yes.
Is it only two shows?
It's going to be three shows. Saturday we have two shows.
Right.
We have a regular cabaret, and then we're going to do a seductive cabaret, which is going to feature burlesque dancers and...
more fist bumps in the studio.
Am I performing in that? I forgot.
We'll
didn't know?
No.
Lisa!
You don't want me. well, great. And it's happening at Sky Candy, which is right over near on Springdale Road. And where can folks go to get information about the show?
People can go to circvita.com or follow us on social media, circvita on Instagram, and you can purchase tickets there.
Great. And I would say if you go to CirqueVita, they've got a lovely website and you can get all sorts of information. There's a wonderful biography of Sochi on there, so you'll be able to see all that, and your performers and great. So I'm so happy that you came on the show.
Yeah, that was really cool. Thank you.
Best of, I try not to say luck because I don't think you need luck, but best wishes on the cabaret.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sochi Sosa of CirqueVita talking about CirqueVita Cabaret on November 18th and 19th at Sky Candy. For more information, CirqueVita.com. And, you know, I just love this song. I don't know if it's as contemporary as it should be for this piece, but this is the Grand Imperial Cirque de Paris from, I always want to say Carousel, but it's not. It's Carnival.
It's Carnival.
The Grand Imperial Cirque de Paris.
We're back. It's Lisa and Nicole. And we are joined by, all right, here we go. Alexandra Bashia Aku Shah.
Very close.
Very
You're
close.
So close.
You say it for the world.
It's a Basiaku. Greek name, friends.
Basiaku?
It's Greek.
It's
Bashiaku.
Bashiaku. That's not hard.
I want to normalize my Greekness. I want to bring it here to Austin.
Opa!
Opa! Re!
which we applaud. And it's something that you you started to highlight in your name a few years back.
Yeah,
and,
it was a big choice.
And we that are disabled and unable to give you what you need should be ashamed of ourselves. And I'm one of those. But you're here to talk about The Caldera. You're directing it. This is a new piece by Sarah Sedgwick.
Sarah Saltwick.
Saltwick.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's terrible. And then produced by Megan Thornton. And I was lucky enough to see one of the readings.
Yeah.
And you're doing it at Ground Floor Theater. And it it is there to benefit Jane's addiction.
Jane's due process.
Jane's Addiction is a...
A phenomenal band.
From the 90s?
Very band. And I was just about to say, Lisa... I'm kind of impressed by you right now.
It's a hard day for me today, folks.
It's an incredible play. Sarah Saltwick is this, like, we have this Austin-based treasure in Sarah Saltwick, a writer who, you know, has been at Playwrights Center in Minneapolis, who's had her work done at the Lark, has had stuff done at the Vortex here locally, and this new work is... I mean, can we talk about current events? Can we talk about, you know, making a play that is moving hearts and minds? The Caldera... is this play that she wrote about Lizzie and Maggie, who are hitting the open road in search of healthcare. They are hitting the open road in search of an abortion. And up in the New Mexico mountains, between the country of California and the restrictive lands of Texas, they find themselves. And that's the blurb, but man, it hits you. I know, you were in the room with me.
I was in the room, and we were talking a little bit about magical...
You're always in the room where it happens.
I try to be in the room where it happens. We were talking earlier about magical realism, and this has a bunch of that as well in this piece.
Yeah, it's magical, but it's also intuitive. It feels to me like you know, earthy. It feels like humanity. It moves from, like, the pleasure and, like teenage energy of like, let's go on a road trip, let's be ourselves, let's discover the country, to like truly like the unfolding of nature and spirit and like just opening up to the great unknown and the great known within. Can I be a poet? No, Sarah's the poet. Come see the play.
Alex, you are a poet as well.
It's a reading. We're doing a reading, and it's on Wednesday next week at 8 p.m. It's the 26th, and it's at Ground Floor Theater. But all the proceeds for this reading, the reading is a benefit, and all the proceeds are going to Jane's Due Process, and they're a nonprofit based in Texas, and... their mission is to ensure legal representation for pregnant and parenting teens. And they are like one of the few organizations in the country that is dedicated to pregnant teens. And they're like a pioneer in delivering legal services to teens.
Right.
So this is really important stuff.
The subject matter of this piece couldn't be more timely with what's going on in Texas right
now.
And it's right in line with what Nicole and I were talking about earlier in the show about getting out and voting. With that vote, you can help change hearts and minds. And so that's one of the things when I look at this piece, as you said, I was at the reading, I would think it can go a long way to changing hearts and minds, because it puts a human face on an issue that many people don't really, well, I would say a lot of people are right in the middle of it, but some people divorce themselves from it.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, your theater is called Ground Floor Theater for a reason. And one of those reasons is that people get to be at the ground floor of something that is going to change the world. And I think this play is one of those plays. And I just would love all of our Austinites to be there to collaborate on its process and to honor its story. So
to that end, I know that this is a reading, so this is it's not a staged reading; it's a reading.
We might stage partial elements. We want to give some energy to the spectacle in the piece.
Okay.
But the main thing is that you can hear it, that you can digest it, that you can take the information and what is evocative to you and reflect it back, and also that we honor and give these funds that are brought into Jane's Due Process.
In our last minute,
yes,
we know there's going to be a talkback afterwards. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
So the talkback will be with Irma Garcia from Jane's Due Process, and then it would also be with the artists working on the piece. So, of course, Sarah Saltwick and me, and then Megan Thornton, who's the literary manager at Hyde Park Theater and who's been shepherding this play from the beginning. And then the reading itself is featuring Macy Butler and Julianne Villarreal and Lana Leslie, All Austin incredible actresses here.
Yeah. Cool conversation.
Amazing. And where can folks go to get information?
Please go to groundfloortheater.org.
/box/box, which is our box office.
Yeah, and then check out Facebook, where we have The Caldera. That's the event name, and please join us.
Well, great. Well, I'm looking so forward to seeing that.
Me too. I'm looking forward to seeing you there.
And that is The Caldera, playing at Salt. Ground Floor Theater. It's by Sarah Saltwick. You can see it October 25th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, groundfloortheater.org/box, or search it on Facebook. And this is a song called My Choice from Rooms, and it's about the very subject of which we speak.
This is excruciating, somewhat humiliating.
We just have enough time to say goodbye, Nicole.
Ta-ta!
You can see links at offstageonair.com. And we're going to be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye,
Shazam.
Everybody. Shazam.
Some petal flowering into something wild. I can't be a mother.